Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is my partner in crime.
Camping with my dad, Aaron O'Brien.
Oh, camping with my dad.
Come on, Jake, let's go camping.
And my best friend and his creepy uncle.
This trip got really shitty fast.
You know, if the only thing that could make it better is if Morn was there.
That would be kind of cool, because, like, Morn would be drunk, and he'd just be running through the fields acting like a lunatic.
Oh, that'd be great. Like, he'd pose as a Jemadar, because, like, no one would know the difference.
I'd be like, what the fuck is that guy?
Like, he's ripped. Like,
Is he ripped?
Is he?
Does he just store fat differently than humans?
Well, anyway, however he looks, or his costume, he's either ripped or he's got, you know, muscles sewn into his costume.
So, in case you're wondering, we are talking about the Deep Space Nine, the Jem'Hadar, which came out on June 12th, 1994, and it is episode, season 2, episode 26.
I thought it was season 3 for some reason. Apparently, I'm just getting old and senile, because, last week you heard me, like, make a fool of myself in front of J.G. Hertzler.
Yes.
Where I was like, oh, your first role was Martok. I was like, no, I was in the first episode. I'm like, I didn't recognize you without makeup on.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, well, exactly, but that's not, I mean... What he died almost instantaneously.
Yeah, so. he was in it for like 30 seconds.
So it's kind of a throwaway character.
I think it's funny how the couple celebrities that I met thought I was in my 20s.
Hey, that's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing at all.
The thing is, like, I keep a pretty bushy, like, Klingon beard. Yeah. And, like, if I shaved, I'd look even younger, because, like, I have a baby face. I'm like, wow, like, yeah. I think I'm 20 with a beard. Like, am I going to be, like, 15 if I shave it?
You know, you could try that.
It'll get carded when I go buy these mountains of booze that I have in my house.
Yeah, but you could totally, like, pose as a high school student.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, man,
it's really cool.
Check out the latest Synthaholics. They'd be like, get out of here, you nerd.
I get the wedgies and the swirlies.
Man, it's just like I did before. Oh, man. It didn't get any better.
In the year 2017. It doesn't make any sense. Like, what did you guys think about those interviews that we got last week? I was absolutely stunned.
You did great, and it was awesome, all the people we got to talk to.
Like, just that we got to talk with Nichelle and JG and Aaron Gray all in the same episode. Granted, I mean, like, the Aaron Gray thing blew me away, that she was, like, up for being Janeway.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I mean, I had to, like, contain myself a little bit, not, like, just freak out all over the place, but I was like... That totally would have changed Voyager. Voyager would have been a completely different show with Aaron Gray as Janeway. What would that show be like? I want to go to the alternate universe where that show is a thing.
It would be different. I don't know. It's strange that she got basically bounced out just because, you know.
Like, some guy she didn't recognize from, like, 20 years ago
A Magnum P.I. appearance she did.
Yeah, like, and, like, I think she was only in one episode. I mean, she did a lot of, like, one-episode things here and there.
Well, yeah, Magnum P.I. always had, like, one good-looking girl that'd show up, like, oh, I'm in trouble, I need your help, Magnum, and he'd be like, all right, I'll help you, and, you know, that typical...
Did you bring the Magnum condoms?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but it's just, like, what, I mean, it blows my mind that, like... That, you know, just because, like, just, I don't know, just that kind of political BS, like, basically kicked her out of the role. I'm like,
but those things happen.
And then Genevieve, what's her face, quit, and then they didn't even call her. Oh, like, they called Kate Mulgrew. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, you could have, like, called multiple people, you know, I don't know. It just blows my mind. Like, what, I don't know, like, just what, like, they brought in Seven of Nine for sex appeal in season four. Like, I mean, we've had Guy on before, and he's basically like, yeah, they brought her in for boobs, but then they actually wrote her character really good, and she became probably one of the most compelling characters on the show. But would that have happened in this alternate reality where Erin Gray became...
Who knows?
Because, I mean, you know, Erin Gray's still gorgeous, you know, right now.
Yeah, no.
And you know, back in... What, the early 90s? She would have been even better. I mean, like, it just, would that have, would they even need to bring 7-9 into play?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But again, they wrote Janeway so stiff. That's the only thing. So,
but that's the thing. Like, I think Erin Gray as a person just has so much, like, chutzpah, and, like, she's so, like, she's very much sort of like early on, you know, Wilma Deering, or very, like, passionate and like
right
need to get things done. Like, she's a very powerful person.
She might be more of a Shatner type like Kirk character, you know, for Janeway.
But the thing is, like, Kate Mulgrew did have some say in her character. So, like, she didn't want the Chakotay, you know, relationship type thing going on, so like she felt that was very important for her character not to go that way.
Sure.
So I mean Kate Mulgrew did have some kind of say in the character, so I just wonder if, like, what would Erin Gray's say in the character have been? Like, would it have gotten her better dialogue? Because I just feel like Janeway was poorly written for because, you know, her first woman captain.
She would have gotten with Neelix.
God, no. Then who would have put Shacked up with the sexy Klingon in season 7?
I don't know.
Because that was a funny episode.
Where she's
hitting on Kim, and then Neelix comes in and saves him because Neelix wants some of that Klingon.
These are questions with answers that will never be heard.
Never be heard. But it just, I mean, just that interview just blew my mind, like, talking with Erin Gray for that few minutes. I'm just like, I just...
Well, I have
so many theories about Voyager anyway.
Yeah, I know. You had a great time. You got to connect with her and, you know, like, you developed over those, you know, what, 2-3 days.
I spoke with her a lot more than just what you heard on the show.
It's
yeah.
You know. But, I mean, you developed a nice little friendship relationship there with her. So that's cool. Michelle Nichols was wonderful, very sweet. Oh, such a sweet lady.
So sweet, so nice, and she was so gracious. Like, yes. Some random guys walking up to her, and you know, at her age, and just like just giving us the time of day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she was wonderful.
We didn't really, obviously, wasn't on the podcast, but we did see Shatner, but
very briefly.
It was bonkers.
But I mean, you heard the immediate after effect of us, you know, because we were talking with I can't remember her name, Danielle, I think.
Yes, yeah,
Danielle. She was in line. She was saying how it was a quick. She started talking to us like, "Oh, this is the quickest thing I ever did."
Yeah,
and I'm like, "Oh, so did you see the Star Trek Discovery trailer? Would you want to talk on a podcast?" And so we got our immediate like after. So we didn't get Shatner, but we got as close to Shatner as we could get.
Shatner was nice for that, whatever, 30 seconds, 40 seconds we were, you know, not even a full minute.
It was like under 30.
You cannot, I mean, unless you've been in this experience, you cannot believe the amount of people that came out to see Shatner. I mean, it was crazy.
I mean, the line wrapped around the building, and then the photo opportunity itself, like, it stretched all the way across the convention. It might have even wrapped around. I was in the...
And that was... He did 2 photo ops, didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah, so we were in the one, and then did the other one. So, I mean, it's just... there must have been at least 1,000 people, if not more, got their pictures taken with Shatner.
I mean, it was just an amazing weekend. I cannot wait for another big con like this. I'll probably be hosting more panels because I talk with them after the panel, and they're like, they're going to try and like organize a little bit better and try to get, you know, get us prepared a little bit sooner.
Yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows what they'll get next year. So
hopefully, like, you know, LeVar Burton or Jonathan Franks or something. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. LeVar Burton would be cool.
I'd love that. But yeah, I mean, I just wanted to catch up a little bit after that con because it was not a regular episode. Like, you heard Erin, but I mean, we only got together for those couple little times, well, and then I was running around doing all this other
stuff. Yeah, Dave was doing all the legwork. I was stuck at my table for the most part, so.
Did your table do okay?
Did all right. We're going to make some adjustments for next year, and for future cons to try to make more cash, so. It's difficult because we're doing our own thing. You know, we're not, like, doing other characters and stuff like that. Like, we're not doing established characters. We're doing our own stories. So a lot of people kind of walk by and they don't recognize it. If it's not Wolverine, if it's not Captain America,
yeah,
you know, they're just like, well, I don't know what that is. And they just walk by. So there's a big chunk of audience that are like that. And, yeah, you know, it's just how it is. I mean, but then there are people who are out there looking for new content.
Yeah, the new kind of stuff. Yeah,
there are people who are like, who are always scouting for the new thing. You know, yeah. not everybody's like that. Some people just follow the you know, what everyone else is following. Some people mm-hmm. are followers, and some people are sort of like their own little scouts, you know. And the scouts are probably like 5% of the population.
Sure, yeah. So
while everyone else is, you know, hey,
what's a Wolverine?
Yeah.
No, but that was for your Numina comics that you're doing, and I got to meet some of your partners on that. They were really cool guys.
Yeah, they're nice guys and real creative, very talented. Real talented. They actually, their talent blows me away. So
what are you guys changing up for next time?
We're going to have some more books out, and we're going to do some more prints, and we're going to change out our display a little bit to be a little more flashy. So, you know, and I might do a couple prints with some other IPs that are a little established, but I might do a mashup of different things, like, you know, He-Man versus the Transformers. I'm, you know, just something goofy like
off the
that.
Wall.
You know, and people just catch their eye. I'm not going to do too many. I don't want, but it does seem to at least get people to come to your table more.
Yeah, they'll at least look a little bit longer if they see something they're familiar with.
Right, because a lot of people see your stuff and they're like, I don't know what that is. So,
because I mean, like, you know, God bless them. It's what they're there for. But I mean, I just like would walk by a table and someone would like, oh, like we have this, and it's like this is like $5 and this is $10, and I'm like, I didn't even ask.
Yeah. Right. And
it's just like, oh, thanks.
That's the other thing is when you're at a table like that, you got to learn how to like soft sell without being under aggressive, but you can't be over aggressive. So you got to be friendly and you got to be like, oh, hey, and blah, blah, blah. This is what we charge for this. And, you know, so that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool seeing all the stuff, but some people were way too aggressive, I think. A couple people.
Sure.
They're just like, oh, this is, I'm like, I
didn't ask.
I glanced. Yeah. And just my glance warranted this like big spiel. I'm like, although I guess to be fair, like, you know, I kind of did that a little bit when we were at the Synthaholics table. I was just like, just desperate for anything. Yeah. And we had nothing established. I mean, it was Star Trek kind of, but like, people didn't know anything about it. So I was just like,
Yeah, no, it's a hard thing to do.
It is hard.
I've done enough cons now that I'm pretty comfortable behind the table. I get up and I talk to people, but I also, you know, if they don't seem like they're that interested, I don't really push it that hard. Yeah. I can tell when people are looking and people are just kind of like walking by.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, it's a balance. And, you know, obviously I'm not doing it for the money, you know, I'm doing it for what I love. So
yeah, it's a passion project.
Yeah, exactly. So
hopefully we can get you into do some moderating for some panels next year. That'd be awesome.
I don't know how I do, but
it was funny because I had the chance to go talk to Nichelle Nichols before Aaron got to the con on Friday, but I was like, no, I've got to do it with Aaron. I can't do it without him. It would be unfair.
Yeah, and she like came by my table actually.
Oh, that's awesome!
And I was like, oh, how you doing? She's like, hello. So yeah, she was cool.
And her handler was super nice too.
Yeah, she was really nice.
And
too.
We gave her our card. I hope you're listening to this. I can't remember your name off the top of my head. I'm so sorry. I'm terrible with names, so please forgive me. But you were awesome. Thank you so much for being so gracious with us. And
she was cool,
letting us talk with Michelle and all that.
Yeah,
but
good con.
No, yeah, it was really good. It was fun hearing like a bunch of different people's opinions on Discovery, not just, you know, us, you know, like acting for 2 hours about the trainer is awesome.
Yeah, and we got, you know, just you're talking to everyone. You got full gambit of everybody from people who hated it to people who loved it and people who were, you know, curiosity was piqued.
Although to be fair, if you want a crazy, amazing in-depth breakdown of the Star Trek Discovery trailer, you should check out the Trek Yards YouTube channel. They've done like multiple, like 15 minute plus, like in-depth things about like the Klingons, the ship design, the consoles, like, you know, the things on the consoles. Like, they get super in-depth, and I'm like, mad props to you guys for being that in-depth with your stuff. I'm pretty impressed with some of their stuff, and that's how I learned out about the D7, like, how to separate thing, because they did a two-part episode on
saucer separations or separations in Star Trek in general. I'm like, that's really fascinating. It's from, I think it was from like one of the board games that was thing from. But yeah,
Starfleet Battles.
I think it was Starfleet Battles that's part of like the lore in that. That's pretty cool. I mean, they've got some good stuff on there. I just kind of started checking them out.
Yeah, it's cool. I didn't know they were actually. I'm part of their group, but I didn't know they were a podcast.
Yeah.
I'm part of so many Star Trek groups. I don't know what they are.
Yeah, it's.
I just get like
it's hard to keep.
I just got all these bombardment of like you know
Star Trek in my feed.
I'm like I don't know what this is, but yeah. Anyways.
And they're pretty cool guys over Trek here. It's a shout out to those guys.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't really get too much news on Discovery other than we're going to get the companion show.
The talking track.
Right. So.
Woo.
You know that's cool.
So I guess that's two shows I get to watch on CBS All Access if I care about watching. I never watched Talking Dead, so I don't
know. I've watched it like once or twice, but I haven't really like – it's not a
– I mean because it's Star Trek, I might give it a watch, but I just don't know how much I'm going to care.
Well, it's all according to what they say.
Yeah. I mean it totally depends, but
– right. But that's about it. Do we want to get into the Jem'Hadar?
Yes, the Capitan. Good to the Jem'Hadar.
So,
spread it across some bread with some crescent rolls.
If you want.
Grey Poupon.
Grey Poupon.
They are grey, aren't they?
Man, Jem'Hadar. Strange character. So, we start off the episode with Jake. He's got some plant project.
Gee golly, Dad, I'm just planting some seeds.
Wouldn't you rather stick your stem into something more fertile?
Like Nog?
No.
Oh.
Well.
Okay, Dad.
So his father kind of says, you know, this is kind of like baby stuff you're doing. Maybe you should do something a little more, you know, advanced.
I just think it's hilarious that in this scene that that he's like, oh, yeah, I'm an old-fashioned guy, Dad. And then when he asks him, like, what do you want to do? Oh, I want to fly a runabout. And I'm like, that's about as not old-fashioned as you can get, like, immediately.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. But then he brings up, like, maybe we could do a planet survey over in the Gamma Quadrant for your science project. So.
And he's like, yeah. Gee, really, Dad? Can I do that?
Yeah. Yes, son, you can. I'm commander. I can do anything I want.
Watch. Dad, why aren't you a captain?
I'm gonna punch out Odo just for the hell of it.
How can you be the lead of a Star Trek show and you're not a captain?
Because I keep punching out Odo.
He's not even part of Starfleet, Dad.
I know. Looks bad on my record.
Oh.
So they decide they're going to get ready to do this Gamma Quadrant survey. And while they're he's in his office... basically, Jake comes back and says, hey, can Nog come with us?
He's doing really bad at his schoolwork, Dad. If he fails, he's going to quit school and he's going to cry like a little girl.
Isn't that a good thing?
No, Dad. He's my best friend. We got to do things together.
Fine.
Without being a, no.
What?
Nothing.
Anyways. So.
Our Nog Nogs.
My Nog Nogs. You know, I gotta tell you something about Nog Nogs later. They're not what you think.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they mean something else in a different... Anyways, it's not a good thing either. I looked it up after we did that, so... Because hashtag Nog Nog brings up other things. I killed Dave Duncan. Then we go back to Quark's bar, and he's talking to Morn, saying that he can tell him anything, and then he just walks away before Morn was about to tell him.
Interesting tidbit. In the German version of this episode, Morn speaks.
Really? What does he say? Guten Tag.
I don't know.
Herr Quark.
Herr Quark, yeah. I tried to Google it, but I couldn't find it, because I read this in the Memory Alpha. And I was like, I was trying to find it, but I just got like just random like German translation sites. I'm like, no. This is not helpful.
So Quark goes to sees Odo going by, and he says, I guess what he wanted to do, he put a proposal to Sisko saying, hey, if I could sell my things on the displays, you know, the computer or the display systems in Deep Space Nine, I could sell some of my product. And Odo basically says no. Cisco said no.
What did you think he said? Oh, he said yes. Guess again.
Yeah. So, at that same moment, Nog comes up and says, "Hey, I'm going to be missing some of my shifts. I am going on a field trip, and I'm going with Cisco and Jake." And oh, really? Oh, maybe I have to go with you. So, as they're boarding the Rio Grande, Nog shows up, and also Quark.
And Cisco. But the thing is, like, I feel like Cisco's supposed to be really annoyed here. But if you watch the scene play out, like, I think they must have been playing lots of jokes on set, because Avery Brooks is, like, super smiley in this scene for being, like, pissed that these people are coming along with them.
You know, the funny thing is, okay, so, like, I'm a dad, and, like, your kids can drive you crazy, and I know you love your kids to death. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I sincerely believe that Cisco loves Jake, you know, for the story. Yeah. But and he's trying to be cool. Like I'm not going to get upset. And he's like, I'm just going to keep smiling. I'm going to keep smiling because I'm going to fucking knock that fucking Quark's head off, you know. So it's funny that Cisco later on kind of like already knows why Quark came along. So, so he's kind of just like, because you know Cisco wanted just time with him and Jake. Just you know, do a little bonding time with his
father,
son.
Father-son things.
Right, but unfortunately.
No.
You're going to get that. You're going to get his wiener friend coming along with his wiener uncle. So, he basically says, yeah, all right, you know, they can come along. So Quark comes along with them, with Nog, and they come to this planet. Beautiful. Idyllic planet. Beautiful. There's no, I guess, big predators on the planet whatsoever.
It's like a early version of Earth. Just flora and bugs.
Bugs and maybe small critters, but nothing crazy.
But not tube grubs, because Quark will not eat them.
No. And there we have... they're hanging out and Quark is getting freaked out with his ears, and he's got like slather on
all these like ointments.
Yeah, he's getting into that ointment a little bit too much when he's putting on his lobes.
And then he rubbed them in really good all over through all the grooves. And like, I love Cisco's like, oh, what's wrong? It's like nature.
I'm allergic to most nature.
Nature's not good for me.
And there's the scene where they're sitting under the tree, Cisco and Quark, and Quark's, you know, basically edging along, like, you know, like about getting his items to be displayed on their the Deep Space Nine displays.
I'll give 2% to orphans on Bajor.
Yeah.
3?
Yeah.
4?
Cisco still, nope.
Don't waste my time.
So, Nog and...
he prepares jambalaya. It seems like an unpractical meal to prepare when you're camping.
I imagine he probably prepped most of it. Or brought it from the you know, runabout.
Yeah, I hope so. I would hope so, because that just doesn't seem like a very practical meal to make. I love jambalaya. I lived in Louisiana for years.
Jambalaya is wonderful.
I love jambalaya, but like just making that like... in the woods just seems really unpractical.
I'm just assuming he had it mostly prepped and he just cooked it in a pot.
Yeah, I mean, that'll work.
You know, maybe he had it prepped and just beamed it down from the runabout and just like, that would, if you could do that, that would be really actually pretty practical.
That would be practical, but I mean like making it from scratch, like.
No, you could never be.
Like that would be ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you do it, but anyways.
I mean, I don't even make it from scratch. Zatarans, thank you.
Quark did not enjoy the jambalaya.
No, he didn't, but Nog did. I'm really getting used to human food.
Human. And then they're heading off to basically Jake and Nog are going to do some survey of the planet the next day. That's the whole plan. And that's when Quark's sleeve gets caught on fire. Just randomly.
Just comedic relief.
Yeah, Quark is really goofy in this.
I mean, I think this episode really needed some comedy in it, considering what happens later on the episode.
I guess.
I mean, Deep Space Nine is the dark version of Star Trek, but this is when it starts to get really dark. And I feel like the levity at the beginning of this episode kind of helps
a little bit with how unlevity it is at the end.
Right. Well, Jake and Nog take off into the woods to do...
And Avorta runs out. And, like, you know, I just... It's just so great watching this show, like...
Now you know.
With prior knowledge of everything.
Yeah, because now you know.
You know, it's like, oh, that's Avorta. That's a bad guy.
Yeah.
And then, like, somehow they have psychic abilities in this one episode and never, ever again.
Never see it again.
Yeah. Nope.
So
maybe she was special. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe there's only a small percentage of them have that ability. But anyways, so she shoots Cisco with some kind of, like, a psychic beam.
And then
he goes down.
Like, oh, I thought you were Jemadar. I'm like, what?
Who are the Jemadar? What? And then the Jemadar show up in their, like, lightning speed shoes.
Lightning speed shoes. I think
how do they do that? Is it like a warping thing?
I don't think they're really moving fast. I think it's just the transition from invisible to visible. It just has that, like, a moving fast look to it. That's my take on it. I don't think they're actually moving very fast. I think they're just...
Gotcha. And Jemadar come and basically, capture all three of them. Now, Jake and Nog are still out in the woods playing with their diddling themselves, so...
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're experimenting, you know, they're young and trying to figure things out for themselves without their parent and uncle around.
Right, right.
But, they could have speed shoes, because, I mean, they've got technology where they can walk through force fields. I mean, they could have speedster shoes. I mean, like Sonic the Hedgehog.
Boots of leaping.
Yeah. Boots of running.
Boots of running.
These boots were made for running.
And Jemadar is gonna do... Anyways, so,
Gee golly, Dad, why'd you get captured?
So, Jake pretty much figures out pretty quickly that something happened to him.
There's treachery afoot.
Yes, and, he's looking for, you know, using his tricorder trying to find his dad in Cork. Cisco in Cork and
Vorta woman.
Vorta woman.
Eris is her name.
Eris, thank you.
I'm really bad with remembering names, but she's got the name of a character from Final Fantasy VII, so I remember her name.
So they're in a shielded area in a cave.
This, I mean, I think you might appreciate this, maybe, but it sort of reminds me of the slaver weapon police trap.
It is.
Like, it's the only thing that's remotely like it.
Yeah.
That I can think of in Star Trek.
Yeah, good point. It does have a similarity to that.
I mean, just like it's a ring and they can't really leave it.
Leave it, right.
I mean, it doesn't say it'll kill them. They just can't move. And
fell into a burning ring of fire. Anyway, so Nog is screaming, help!
Ah! Yeah, Cork. No, Cork is
screaming. I mean, yeah, sorry. Did I say Jake?
No, you said Nog.
Oh, Nog. Same thing.
Nog is screaming, but I mean...
Yeah, but screaming for Nog
screams a lot in this episode.
Yeah, he really does. It's pretty annoying, actually, how cowardly they are. I always forget how bad they act. They kind of, like, taper that off a little bit over time. Like, he doesn't get so reactionary. Well,
like in the first two seasons, they're like kids, and then, like, it's... Then they kind of grow up.
But even Cork, as bad as Cork is, and like he like backpedals on things, but he doesn't like freak out as much, you know?
Yeah, Cork doesn't freak out as much.
Yeah.
But you know, Nog is also like a child Ferengi.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
So like the Ferengi are super, you know, proud,
But anyways, Eris says that, you know, she's got a collar around her that...
Oh, it's preventing me from using my psychic ability that you'll never see again in another episode.
Yeah, and so while they're trying to figure that out, and they're trying to get out of there, they're, like, Cisco's trying to, like, pump her for information because he doesn't know anything about the Jemadar and, or the Founders or the Dominion.
What's going on? Like, you know, and Quark's bringing up, I've been trying to make a trade negotiation for the Dominion for like a year.
Yeah.
They won't return my phone calls.
There's a good reason for
that. Nog and Jake get beamed back to the Rio Grande.
Right. So they go on, the Rio Grande and they're trying to take the autopilot off so they can, you know, get out of there. But they're
doing it. Did you remove all the isolinear chips? Reminds me of like the second episode or the Naked
Time. Naked Now. Yeah, Naked Time, Naked Now.
Or like the engineer's all high and he removes all the chips and makes like a house out of them.
Right.
And Data's got to put them back really fast.
Except when Jake and Nod did it, they were going to explode the warp.
Blow the warp core.
Yeah, because the warp containment field was gone. It was destroyed.
It'd be great. It'd be great if they put it back in and it still didn't stop anything. Just and then, no more Jake. Yes.
Jake and Nog is both gone.
Gone forever.
Right. And
we see a clip back at the station where the captain of the Odyssey is talking.
Right. Well, this is kind of cool, too, because when I first saw this way back when, that there's another Enterprise-type ship, you know, a Galaxy
another class. Another Galaxy class.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's the third one we see, because we saw the Enterprise and the Yamato in TNG.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yamato blew up.
Yeah.
Odyssey does, too.
Yes. Sadly. But it was cool to see that.
What is Enterprise D for good for? What's Galaxy class ship for blowing up?
Blowing up. Pretty much.
That's what they do. Or being driven into the ground.
And like, I'm assuming there's just the amount of crew as on the Enterprise as on the Odyssey.
Yeah, 1,000 people.
That's
yeah.
Dead.
And the Yamato.
Yeah. Dead. So
Jake and Nog see a Jem'Hadar ship fly up and they start freaking out.
Right, but it just kind of passes them by.
It goes to the wormhole, and that's when the Jem'Hadar guy beams down in front of everybody.
Yeah,
in Deep Space Nine. They put a containment field around him.
He just walks right through it.
He just walks right through it, and he's like basically threatening them.
These guys are
them,
gangsta.
Telling them that, Sisko is being held for questioning indefinitely. And then you've got like all these great close-ups of like your main characters, and then they've got like the same two people like walking in the background for like almost all of them except for Kira.
Right.
It's like, oh crap, it's camera on, I gotta run around to that gotta run back.
These guys are all out of breath by the end of the scene.
Like the one Asian guy, he's like, oh yeah, I'm on camera. I was like, it was just kind of funny watching.
Look
the
busy
guys.
The boss is here.
Camera's on, crap.
So basically he says that, hey, the Jem'Hadar say, hey, we got your commander, and you're screwed.
Yeah, so they make a plan to send the Odyssey through the wormhole, and
with a couple runabouts,
they're like, "Oh, we've got to come and help you because we're the main crew."
Yeah,
and it's like, "What have you done? Oh, we fought the Maquis."
Yeah,
all like, we had was a couple shuttlecrafts
with a couple phasers aboard.
But you need all the help you can get, I guess.
You don't have any combat experience. I thought that was kind of funny. You just kind of put that right in their face. Like, you have no combat experience.
You have no combat experience. Except for Major Kira being a terrorist.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, it's like, Captain, how am I going to get the combat experience if you never let me participate in a mission with combat experience?
Like, so they go through the wormhole and back at the... The prison circle.
Prison circle. They're trying to pick...
The slaver weapon police web.
Yeah, they're trying to pick her neck thing that's dampening her psychic powers.
And it's like just... It's got all these like layers and layers upon locks. It's a Ferengi's dream.
Yes, and at the same time then we have the Jem'Hadar come and basically... tell Sisko and everyone that, you know, who they are and that they're all screwed, basically.
Yeah. See ya. Have fun.
You're not going to enjoy yourself.
This whole episode is super elaborate, especially for the Jem'Hadar. Like, I feel like the Jem'Hadar got the Klingon syndrome after this episode. They just became way dumber.
They were seem a little more intelligent, and then when we see them later, they get a little dumber, and then they get a little dumber, and then they just become just complete oafs.
Yeah.
You know? Well, and then from there, Jake and Nog are taking off. They've turned off the autopilot.
And they're trying to just navigate.
And Jake is just doing like constant left turns in the runabout.
Like, you still haven't left orbit yet? It's like, I don't know how.
I don't know how, Jake. Oh my god!
He's like, go to warp. I'm like, yeah, next to a planet. That's smart. He's like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Like, I can't even do this in impulse. I don't know if I could do this in warp. So, if the Odyssey and all the other runabouts catch up with Jake and Nog. O'Brien comes aboard, fix their ship, and basically says, hey, to the captain of the Odyssey, we just want to take a quick look and see if we can get Sisko, if we can find him located on the planet.
And at this point, they've cracked the lock. She shoots her energy beam out of her chest, magic.
And they get out of the little police web shield area, and they're taking off. And Sisko actually takes down one of the Jem'Hadar, which is pretty impressive.
And then Quark does too.
With a gun. It shoots him, yeah. But I mean that Sisko just jumped.
Oh yeah, because that Jem'Hadar was like, I wanted me to Klingon.
Yeah.
You guys suck, you're not Klingons. I wanted to fight someone who could really fight.
Right. So they're running out in the forest, and at the same time, while the Odyssey and the runabouts approach the planet, the Jem'Hadar ships start attacking, and there's just really heavy fighting, and they're really beating the Odyssey up.
I think it's really cool, like, shots in this episode, like with some crazy underneath shots where the ships Jem'Hadar are flying down.
Right.
And then, like, somehow the runabouts are taking hits, and they're just fine. But the Galaxy class, that camera is on, like, the biggest spring you've ever seen. Like, that camera's jerking all around.
Right, yeah. They're really getting beat up. And, O'Brien finds Sisko and Quark down on the planet and beams them up.
But there's no communication, and he just beams up the third person. He's like, I don't know who that is. Like, why would you beam up an unknown? Like, it could have been a dangerous person.
That's a good point. I wonder that too when I saw that. But so they beam aboard and they take off. And while they're all trying to take off, the Odyssey unfortunately is turning around to leave, and the Jem'Hadar ship rams right into the Odyssey.
I guess it causes a warp core breach because the whole ship is because you see like a chunk of the secondary hull gone after the Jem'Hadar ship, and then it just blows up. So like it must have. Like,
well, their ship was pretty pounded too. So
yeah, like the left nacelle was like going.
Yeah, so I'm sure they were not doing good anyway. So.
But like instant warp core breach after that, because I mean the whole ship went up. Like nothing survived.
Like, from that. Yeah, like 1,000 people dead. It's pretty.
In the blink of an eye, it was just like
stunning.
Whoa! It's just. I mean, Star Trek had never done anything like that before. Yeah. Sure, we had those like weird time loop episodes in TNG where like, oh, you know, the Galaxy class ship like blew up. You know, the Enterprise blew up like 16 times in that one episode.
Right.
So they had to figure out a way out of the trap that they were in, but.
Yeah, so, but they get, you know, the runabouts all get back to the wormhole, and they get back to the back to Deep Space Nine, and just when Sisko's ready to leave.
Quark's like, wait, I need to talk to you.
One more second.
You know those screens and those merchandise I was wanting to say? I want to put this, like, necklace on it. Yeah. It's got all these locks on it.
So the necklace that he was picking off the heiress there end up being completely useless.
They're
just a lock. There's no mechanism to dampen any psychic or telepathic abilities. So he realizes that she was just trying to get aboard and like trying to get to.
She was trying to be a plant.
Yeah, to get them, you know, get to know them and know what's there, and then kind of be a spy. And once they get her aboard the ops area, he pulls a phaser on her. And she just beams away.
Yeah, she just beams away of her own volition, like because they just expel out her plan, and she's like, "Oh, very good, Captain. I didn't think you'd figure this out."
Right.
Beams away. There's no ship nearby. She's not on the ship. They've got some crazy good transporters in the Dominion.
Yeah, that's the Dominion thing is pretty wacky. How
overpowered they are.
Yeah,
they get scaled back a lot though. Like. They're super powerful in this episode, and they get scaled way back.
Were they just showing off with the best they had? You know,
I guess because Vortas no longer have that telepathic power.
Yeah,
like the Jem'Hadar, like
get dumber.
Yeah, they lose about 100,000 IQ.
100,000.
They
can't. I mean, like he just walked through like that.
They walk through the confinement beam like
no problem.
Like. I mean, it's effective and compelling television when you're like your new bad guys like,
just walk through everything
that scary
like a wall of feathers. Nothing.
And yeah, that's the thing about this episode. Like this episode, you know, end of season two of Deep Space Nine. Like nothing, there's nothing like this in all of Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
How dark this. I mean, at this point.
Yeah.
Like because Deep Space Nine just keeps getting darker and darker. You get the pale moonlight.
Right.
But at this point, like. Just seeing a kamikaze ship,
yeah,
just losing a Starfleet, you know, a Galaxy class ship, you know, this is the same thing as the Enterprise,
yeah,
just get wasted,
right.
It's just like, what?
Yeah,
it's. I mean, this is so shocking, and like, it's still. I mean, like, it's still kind of hit me a little emotionally today. I'm like, wow, this is heavy for something from 1994.
1994, right? So you picked this episode. You want to talk about it? Is there like, what were some of the things that you when you watched it that you were like, this is, you know, something notable. I mean, obviously this is our first you know, appearance of the Dominion and Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, I mean, that was notable, and just that kamikaze like thing at the end. I mean, that always stood out to me.
Of course,
just
it's huge.
That,
yeah,
I mean, you know, like they're screwed. You know, basically, they've met these people that are way more advanced. It's like. It's basically the Dominion are basically the Borg of Deep Space Nine, since you only had the Borg and the pilot.
Sure, yeah.
Like, you've got this, like, almost insurmountable, like, technologically advanced, like, you know, these crazy warrior race.
Right, right.
All this crazy politics behind it, too. It was its own big thing.
My feeling is when after I remember seeing this, like, I've seen this episode a couple times, but I like the introduction of all these, you know, like the Jem'Hadar, and they seem much more
cunning.
Cunning,
menacing.
Yeah, all that stuff, and then they get, like you said, they get dumber.
It's like the Klingon syndrome, because in TOS, the Klingons are cunning,
yeah,
and they're interesting, and they have strategy, and they think about stuff, and then Next Gen is like. There's something on our hull eating our hull. We were next to Enterprise. Enterprise must have put it on us.
Right.
So we're going to shoot the Enterprise.
No, I get it. And then.
Like, it's just like, you know, like A plus B equals F.
Right. Yeah.
It's just like, what?
Yeah, I like that. And I like the. I like the battle, obviously, with the Odyssey being destroyed, and just it was very interesting. It went really fast. Unfortunately, I think that battle, the whole thing, the last 10 minutes of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, it's like goes by so quickly.
Well, you know, they're also limited TV budget.
I understand. Like, it's just, no, I get it, but.
It's still impressive for Star Trek. Like, I mean, usually we don't get space battles in Star Trek.
Sure.
Like, you get, like, maybe an exchange of phaser fire.
You get you get a lot in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, like, in regular Star Trek, you get, like, an exchange of phaser fire, then they start talking about their feelings.
Yeah. I got feelings, too, you know. You can't just shoot your torpedoes at me and expect me not to be angry.
What about my aft torpedoes?
I like when you fire those. So, yeah, but the whole intro, you know, Sisko and Jake going camping and stuff like that.
It starts off so happy-go-lucky, and then it just turns.
I don't know. It just annoys the hell out of me. I don't like the Sisko-Jake stories. Not my favorite. They just kind of wear on me.
Oh, we still haven't done the parasail episode, which is the entire episode. Just Jake and Sisko together.
I know. I know.
You said we should do that like a year ago. We haven't gotten to it yet.
It's because it's so brutal.
I want to make a sailing ship.
Okay, son, let's go. I don't know. It's not that I don't like the parent son. You know, storylines.
It's just it wasn't done great in Deep Space Nine, I guess.
Yeah, it just seemed kind of forced in some ways. And, like, you know, he's, like, trying to be overly being the good dad. And Jake is the, you know, over the moon for his dad kind of thing.
Sort of, but sort of not.
Well, that it tapers as time goes on a bit, but in the beginning, you're just like, all right, come on.
Oh, and they're like laying down. It's like, gee, golly, Dad, do you remember the time me and my mom and you did
the, we can't remember this ever. Yeah, he was like, can't remember being this happy ever. I know. It's just like
kind of a Disney movie or something like that.
It's like it's a little too syrupy for me. And it's not that I don't like Sisko and having a son with Jake and having that relationship. It just gets a little too silly. Like,
it's like Star Trek has growing pains, and they try to do something different with all the captains. So you've got Kirk, who's like the brash, like crazy, you know, willing to risk anything captain. And then you've got
the cerebral.
And then you get the cerebral, like, let's think and let's talk about things, Picard.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, how can we do things different with Sisko? Like, let's give him a son.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he's got the father-son thing. And then we've got Janeway. Like, well, she's a woman, so that's just, we don't have to do anything special with her. It's just she's a woman. And then so they wrote badly for her. And then we got Archer. It's like, okay, he's not a woman.
But he's
not bald.
But he's, like, super exploring to
Let's give him a dog.
To a fault. Let's make him explore to a fault.
Let's make him a pet owner.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's just, like, I wonder what, you know, the shtick for, you know, Sequoia Martin-Green will be, and since she's, like, the main character, like, is, you know,
Oh, I guess she's the black woman. I mean, I hope that's not the stick, but I mean, but looking at the writing of Star Trek and how they like, make their captains, it could be that elementary. Unfortunately, I hope it's not because like, oh, let's make it the pet owner. Oh, is this the one's got the son? Like, you know,
I don't.
It looks like she's like part Vulcan though, because the way
she was raised by Vulcans,
or raised by Vulcans at least, because of the way Sarek's like, oh, you're too stupid to learn Vulcan.
Well, my issue more than anything is that. Sisko is an interesting character in some aspects, and but he's like almost too he's so placid in some cases. Mm-hmm. Like he's almost like too calm, and it just kind of makes me like, all right, come on, dude. Nobody's that calm all the damn time. I mean, he does get upset. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he does get angry.
Oh, he's way more emotional than Picard.
No.
Picard doesn't.
But he has, like, this dreamy, like, way to deliver his lines. Like, he'll be like, oh, well, da, 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 da. You know, like, he's just like this. It's a totally different way of him for a commanding officer to
sure,
be.
But, I mean, also, if the captains, that documentary that William Shatner going to talk about.
That's wacky.
If that's any indication, Avery Brooks is crazy. So.
Oh, I know. I don't know what that was about.
So, like,
that was the one thing about that. I was like, what is going on?
Avery Brooks, if you've not seen The Captains, it's a super fascinating documentary that William Shatner goes around and talks with all the people who are captains on Star Trek.
Even Chris Pine.
It's really, I mean, like, it's good. It's interesting, especially his conversation with Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart was the probably, most enlightening.
It was definitely the most enlightening, but they were all interesting in their own ways. And then you've got Avery Brooks, and I don't know if Avery Brooks is a stark raving lunatic or if he just didn't like William Shatner and was just giving him shit the entire time.
Yeah, so Avery Brooks basically sits behind the piano, very talented piano player, and he's just making up a song and making Shatner sing the song with him.
And
Shatner's trying to ask him questions, and he just keeps on singing to him. And he's like, okay.
Like, I just don't know, like, what's going on. It's just, like, what?
It's
like,
different.
It's like, is he just losing it?
Or maybe just stoned out of his mind or drunk.
Maybe that too.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but.
It's just bizarre. And like, and the thing is, like, the thing I say about Deep Space Nine is in season 7, because of that thing, Sisko's completely different in season 7.
He is different.
I just feel like he stops acting. He just starts being himself.
Being himself, right? Yeah.
He's just Avery Brooks saying lines instead of Avery Brooks acting like Sisko.
Yeah. So anyways, it's not that I dislike the Jake Sisko relationship. I get a little like it's too syrupy, and I know it changes in the next couple seasons, like, you know, Jake's getting older and he's trying to, like, you know, he's dating.
I'm going to be a writer.
Yeah, he's got it.
I'm not going to go to Starfleet.
Right.
What?
Right, what?
I'm just like, of all the things you could be.
Yeah.
In the future.
Well, I mean, writers, you still need writers in the future.
I don't know. I just feel like, you know, I mean, even nowadays we have all this stuff aggregated. Uh-huh. To us through, like, you know, RSS feeds and all this stuff like that. Like, news is like just.
So you don't think you need writers? I mean, someone writes all that content.
Someone writes it now, but, you know, everything being, like, monitored with cameras and audio equipment, all this like that. Like, couldn't computers just start, like, writing down, like, you know, just, like, catalytic thing with an algorithm that just, oh, these are the interesting facts for the day. Like, writers, I mean.
Yeah, but don't you want to write something and read something that's interesting and, like, inspiring or that moves you?
I don't know. That's the thing with Star Trek. We don't ever see what their pop culture is like. We don't know. And then
we don't really know much of that.
And then we've got Jake. So, I mean, like, if we knew what their pop culture was like, maybe Jake being a writer would be interesting. But that fact that we have so little scope about what life is like outside of Starfleet.
Right.
It's just like it's just.
Yeah.
It's so foreign.
I know.
And we barely go back to Earth ever. It's just, you know, so, like, anything that's not, like, Starfleet in Star Trek is just weird.
Right.
Because we have no context for it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's my big thing. And you know, although the Quark and Nog, you know, like, outburst are kind of funny in their own way, I know you love Fringy. The Fringies are probably my least favorite. They do nothing for me.
Granted. I mean, that's the thing. Like, most people hate Ferengi. And if they haven't seen Deep Space Nine, I'm like, Wait till you see Deep Space Nine. I will guarantee you will hate Fringy less after you've seen Deep Space
Nine. They made their whole backstories and, you know, their culture. They kind of, like, filled out all those things, which is interesting in its own right. But I just never did much for me anyways, you know. So it's not my thing, you know. And I don't, like, dislike Quark as a character. He's very fun to watch most times, and he's kind of like that, you know, he's always needling things and moving the story forward for his, because of his own, you know, avarice and stuff like that, so, which is interesting, but it's still not
compelling enough to carry it for you.
It just doesn't make me go, like, I gotta watch this, you know, where you, I know, it makes you want to watch it, because you do like his character.
Yeah, I do, but I mean, like, that, I mean, like, I just, that part is what I mentioned to you, because that's what sticks out to me as, like, oh, look, that's kind of what it's about, but, like, the reason I wanted to talk about it was because this is, like, the beginning of the Dominion. Well, this is where Deep Space Nine starts.
Yeah, no, this is where the beginning starts, and this is where we get the whole Dominion War, so, you know, end of episode, I mean, season two, you know.
That is a fantastic finale. It's just, like, we just got screwed. Super bad.
There's some crazy stuff going to happen.
and speaking of getting screwed really bad, we're drinking the adios, motherfucker, tonight.
Adios, Odyssey.
And your strange new bridge.
Yeah, that's right. Have a drink for our fallen Starfleet comrades. Here we go.
Adios. But,
Dead souls.
I think I have some people complained about slightly pivoting topic to Star Trek Discovery. Some people complained that, you know, the bridge looks too big and it's too different from what we saw. But, I mean, other than the chairs they're sitting in, that bridge is completely different from what we saw in Next Gen.
Yeah.
I mean, the back console is a lot lower.
Are you saying from the Odyssey?
Yeah, the Odyssey.
Okay.
So, like, people are saying, oh, like, you know, the bridge doesn't make sense. It's too big and it's changed. I'm like, even in, like, this is a Galaxy-class ship. I mean, the interior of that bridge is completely different than the,
You know, my issue is, like, people are putting, like, pictures of, like, Captain Pike's Enterprise compared to the Discovery. I'm like, look, I get it. It's different. And let's face it, it's almost, you know, 50 plus years since they did the original pilot. Yeah. You're just going to have, I'm nostalgic for that too, but you got to let it go. You just can't go back to that time. Nobody's going to watch those shows if it's with those old sets and old uniforms. It's just, it's not going to fly. I'm sorry. I know I love all of that. And Dave, you know, I love all that stuff. But nobody's going for it.
No, I mean, no one's gonna pay for all access if it looks like a 50-year-old TV show.
Yeah, exactly. So you're just gonna get past it.
And basically, the consensus from what I spoke with people about at the con about the Discovery trailers, everyone feels like it has a very cinematic, almost a movie quality to it.
It looks great,
which is why I think it's behind that paywall now.
Right. And then I've been hearing people saying that. That Star Trek is becoming like a social justice warrior thing.
Because there's
no like white guys on the bridge, you know, especially in the command capacity.
Jason Isaacs. I mean, he's not in the trailer, but I mean,
I know, but
he's not American. I guess he's British. So he's like,
you know what? All I can say is fuck you, man.
Doug Jung, the guy that played the cool alien. He's a white guy.
Look. It doesn't matter. If you know anything about Star Trek, race is not a factor. It should never have been a factor. Yes.
It's a factor in the fact that it's a blending of races. I mean, because the original series, you got Uhura and Sulu and a Russian.
I'm sure they would have done more crazy stuff if they could have the capacity for it and they know that it would sell the show. I mean, Shatner was cast because he was a good-looking guy. He could play the actor and, you know, he was white. Yeah, there's a reason for that. Back in 1960, that's what people wanted to see. You know, Patrick Stewart, the same idea. You know, 1980, people still wanted to see those kind of things. You know, and then, you know, we moved the needle forward in Deep Space Nine. We have a commander turned captain, Sisko, you know. Avery Brooks is a black man. That was pretty amazing.
And then we had an interracial couple, Jackson. Dax and Worf. I mean, even though they're both aliens, I mean, that's still... black guy and a white girl. The thing is, like, I didn't even as a kid when I watched it, it didn't like faze me. It just seemed. I mean, they were aliens. It just seemed normal to me.
I get upset that people would politicize that about the Discovery. It's like, I'm sorry, this is life. And if you look in the, you know, the population of Earth, you know, there are far more people of color than just white people. So I know, you know, Europe, North America, you know, we get more white people here. But, you know, go to Asia, go to Africa. We got plenty of people of color and they out, you know, there's more population of them. It's just stupid. It's, I don't even want to talk about it. I see these things. I'm like, why?
It's like people are being negative just to be negative. And that's the thing I don't understand about Star Trek.
Or politicize things that do not need to be politicized, especially in Star Trek.
I mean, Marvel's definitely going the social justice warrior thing. But I mean, I don't think Star Trek is, because Star Trek's always been about a wide diversity of things.
Social justice warrior thing is, in certain aspects, I do not disagree. I disagree with the dogma and the how they get so ridiculous with it. You know, there's like the basic philosophies. I kind of like the tenets. I understand, but you can't get so dogmatic. You can't be so dogmatic about everything. That's where it gets silly. You know, it's like anything you take it too extreme. It's
Ghost in the Shell. Like when we talk about that was a thing. I mean, it was totally. Like, that movie died because of social justice warriors.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of that. It's like, I don't know. I do not disagree that people should have equality and stuff like that in all walks of life. But let's not get in the way of our story. And, yes, so Discovery has a woman of color who's probably going to become captain. Martin Green is probably going to become captain at some point. You have
Michelle Yeoh as the present captain.
Yeah, like, why are we worried about it? Let's just get past it. I mean, it's just like,
I think it's about time that we finally have an Asian captain that's Asian not captain. Zulu.
It's just stupid. I hate even talking about it because this is a Star Trek. This Star Trek, we, you know,
all about inclusion.
Yeah, it's always been. And if you're not on board with that,
infinite diversity, infinite combinations.
If you're not on board with those things, just get off the ship.
But that's the thing with Star Trek. I love Star Trek, and I love our fans. I love fans of Star Trek, but at the same time, fans of Star Trek are their own worst enemies because they say they love a thing that is Star Trek, and then and then you get some fans that are like, oh, I hate the JJ movies, or I hate, you know, this, and Voyager? Like, you know, or I mean, yeah.
Caught you.
I don't hate Voyager. It's my least favorite Star Trek, but I still like it better than a lot of things. And I'll still watch Voyager over other things.
No, I know.
Just not other Star Treks. It's in the bottom of Star Trek
for me.
But I mean, like, I still watch it. I don't hate it.
It's not your favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I'll complain about it, but it doesn't mean I hate it. I mean, usually if I complain about something, especially here on Synthaholics, it's because I want it to be better.
I know. I get it. I'm busting your balls. But
they've been busted.
Bust them good.
Peanut butters now.
I don't know. I know what you mean, and that's the other thing is like people like saying it's not like the TOS, the Cage, and stuff like that. It's like, look, it's just it ain't gonna sell. I'm sorry.
Or in the diversity thing, it's like, do you not understand anything about the basics of Star Trek? I mean, diversity and all this stuff. This is like core tenets of Star Trek.
Right.
You're a fan, but how are you missing these key things?
I mean, you go to, you know, Star Trek IV: Voyage Home. You know, you have, you know, the probe that goes by. You know, it knocks out like a ship, and the captain is a black woman.
Yeah.
And then you have it looks like an Indian or East, you know, East Asian man.
Indian.
Yeah. I don't know what is, you know, but he's, you know, dark skinned. He seemed like he had an Indian or Pakistani accent. I don't know. But it's like, that's what Star Trek is. Get over it. You know, it's like people are people. And we're Earth people out in space. And hey, we've got Andorians, we've got Vulcans, we've got all
Tellarites.
We've got all sorts of creatures that are like out there with us. So
yeah, it's all about working together. And in Star Trek, I want to say Star Trek is the only piece of fiction that really has that
positive, unified look at the future. Like, I was surprised when I watched through Buck Rogers to prepare for my Aaron Gray panel that it's a dark view of the future for something like so silly and like, you know, retro late 70s type show. Like, it had a very dark philosophy. Like, the world was screwed up. They invented a bunch of robots that like clocks to solve all their problems.
Right.
And everything outside the big city is a bunch of mutant alien things.
Yeah.
Like, mutant people that are just barbarians. And it's just like, it's a dark view of the future. Yet, even though the world is kind of a crap hole in the world of Buck Rogers,
right,
all the aliens want to take it over. I'm like, why?
Why? Why do you want this one?
Like, if it was a, you know, a paradise like Ryza or like, you know, Earth and Star Trek,
right,
I could see them being like, oh, well, you know, we need to take this over because this is awesome. This is a beautiful place. It should be ours. But why are you trying to like put a stick a flag into a giant mound of shit? I mean, I don't understand.
They like that shit.
I guess they do. But it was just weird that, you know, something so silly and retro also had like a dark view.
Yeah, I know
a pessimistic view of the future.
I know what you mean.
And I can't think of anything like Star Trek that's got an optimistic view of...
Not many.
I can't even think of anything off the... I mean, I'm probably missing something, but just off the top of my head right now, I can't think of anything.
Optimistic view of the human race in the future.
Yeah, because most everything is post-apocalyptic.
Or you know, not working well. Yeah. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But anyways, this episode, interesting to get the introduction to the Dominion. And, you know, a little comic relief here and there, but not a favorite episode of mine. I don't like, it's nothing I despise about it. It just is that you're only getting like it gets into action in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's like the last part of the episode is when it starts getting really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd put this like in one of my favorites, but it's just like, this is a good point just because this is where the Dominion War starts.
Yeah, good point. And the last cool thing I think about this episode is that you don't even see it coming.
Oh, no, because it's like...
It's just
Dad, let's go camping.
Yeah. You want to go camping? So,
yeah, Dad, I want to go camping. Can I be my best friend and his creepy uncle? Please, please.
No.
I've seen him do things. He bends over his nephew, and I don't...
I had to report them.
Oh, no.
No, that's
because it's such a you know, almost like a bait and switch.
It is
because it seems like, because I mean, like, I get what you're saying. I totally see, like, this looks like it's going to be a stupid episode, and then it's like, whoa, like the last 15 minutes is like, what?
Yeah, you got a galaxy class starship blow up, and you know, basically, or almost at war with the Dominion kind of thing. So, yeah, it's pretty serious.
So, I mean, I can see where you're like, it's not like a best episode. It's definitely a good, you know, it's a good episode, but it's not like amazing and it's not crappy.
Right.
It's a nice, good middle of the road.
Right.
It's a good 2.5 lobes out of 5 or three lobes out of 5.
3 lobes out of 5. Yeah. I didn't love the episode, but it's interesting. And it's like a fun intro to see all that happen all at once so quickly, you know.
How many packets of ointment would you give it? Your ointment, would you give it?
2.5.
2.5?
Yeah, 2.5.
That sounds like 2.5, 3. Yeah, that's
it could have been better in some ways.
But as a season finale, I mean, as an episode as it is, but as a season finale, like, would you like bump that up a little bit just because of the holy shit moment at the end?
A season finale, just seeing this in the beginning, my eyes would roll so far out back in my head, be like, oh, no. Not another Jake and Cisco moment.
No, but I mean, once the episode's over, like, I mean, as a season finale.
I don't know. Like, maybe I'm just jaded now because every time you're like, oh, now I'm supposed to be shitting my pants. You know, it's like, I just, every time it's like always we got to up the ante. It's like, you know, can it? I don't know. Something about it's just like, he's like, now, wait till next season. Like, really? Do we have to?
But it was a good wait because we get the Defiant next season.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have to wait a whole other season to get Worf.
Yep.
And Martok.
Yeah, all that fun stuff. So, anyways, it's a fun episode. It's fun, but I don't know if it's my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not like a huge favorite, but I wish it did something Deep Space Nine, because unfortunately, we were supposed to have Michelle Speck tonight. She unfortunately had a work obligation that she had to do. She's got a con next weekend, and so hopefully the weekend after, we'll have Michelle on to talk
The
Offspring.
Right.
So, yeah, if you were looking forward to that this week, sorry.
Going to be pushed off a little bit.
Yeah, but it's still in the works.
Right, right.
And she seems really, really excited. She was like, we'd finally got back in contact with her. She was scared we'd already talked about it without her. I'm like, no, we've been holding it for you. Just for you, Michelle.
We've been holding it. Anyways. Yeah, so anyway.
Oh,
anyways.
Been edging.
Yes. Getting there.
Oh, man. Our ending music is provided by Warp 11, and our beginning music is provided by...
my buddy Dave Wilkes.
And you can find the show at SynthaHolics.com. You can email us at SynthaHolics@Yahoo.com because we love us some emails.
Yeah, send us emails. Tell us what you think. If you disagree, if you think this is a great episode and you just think it's the bee's knees.
Yeah, like let us know. Like, is this your favorite Deep Space Nine episode? Because it's always, no matter what we think of an episode is always someone's favorite. It's always someone's least favorite, too. So maybe this is also someone's least favorite episode. Sure,
absolutely.
Maybe someone only gave it half a lobe.
All right.
Out of five. Who knows?
Maybe. also, if you have the time, we would really appreciate you go onto iTunes and rate and review us. It makes us a little more prominent in the search algorithms of iTunes and all the other corresponding podcast apps out there. So definitely
We need all the algorithms.
All the algorithms we can get. And if you have a couple of bucks, we'd definitely appreciate you going to Patreon.com/Synthaholics. Throw us maybe a buck or two our way, you know, just to help us keep the lights on around here. We appreciate it.
The more we have coming in, the easier it'll be to get to cons.
Right.
And, you know, being able to see you guys and say hi. I mean, it's definitely a dream of mine to be able to go to like the Star Trek Las Vegas or maybe Dragon Con or something, like some bigger con, and just be able to see more people, interact with more people, and
absolutely
run around with my recorder like, what did you think of this? What did you think of that?
Right,
it's a dream of ours, and you know, it definitely helps with the show because I mean the show's got yearly and monthly costs associated with it as well.
Absolutely.
As far as Twitter goes, if you want to follow us, you can follow me at Dave_J_Duncan. The show's at Synthaholic Duo.
I'm at Blackbird2004.
Guy is at GS Davis Art, and join the Facebook conversation, facebook.com/group/Synthaholics.
Always people talking, people having fun over there. So definitely, if you have like article, if you have a question, or just a silly comment,
article,
yeah, throw it out there and say, hey, I found this, or I want to talk about this.
Those pictures of Jupiter you sent were amazing.
Oh yeah, the cyclones and the poles of Jupiter.
Like, who cares about the giant red spot anymore? The North Pole looks freaking awesome now.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's just crazy. And
yeah, yeah. So.
And, it's just like all those flat earthers are like, it's photoshopped!
Jeez.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of flat earth videos.
No, don't.
They're hilarious. It's just, I just can't believe people are so into this.
Such a waste of time.
It's comedic effect for my soul.
I guess so. So definitely join the Facebook group and have fun with everybody who's there, and everyone's got an opinion and thoughts, and it's always fun to interact with everybody.
Oh yeah, it's great fun to interact with anyone who's a listener and just people who just enjoy Star Trek in general.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can invite friends and we'll let them in the group as well. So thank you all for being here. Thank you, Aaron, for coming by tonight.
Man, it was great. We got to talk about the beginning first appearance of the Jem'Hadar.
Their gray poopa.
Yeah, in that jar.
And you know, we got that Sisko role play, which you know was a nice for that that imaginary tier on Patreon for that slash fiction.
God, no.
Yes. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Me, 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 me.
You, 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 you.
Oh.
Not on key.
You know, we're going to do the Jake Sisko thing. You be Jake, I'll be Sisko. Okay. Because I got the deeper voice, and you can be like, hey, Dad.
Hey, Dad. Okay.
Just
I'm sure it'll come up at some point.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
So, so if you have any like stupid Jake things to throw out, you know,
what's a penis, Dad?
Let me show you, son.
Wow.
Zip.
How did Mom do that? Because that's us.
Yeah.